This is John Rhodes, and welcome to Mystic Babylon Poetry Podcast, broadcasting from near The Hague in San Francisco. Today we're having two poets besides me read. They are Marvin Heimstra and David Eugene Parch, who prefers to be called Eugene David. Marvin Heimstra is most well known in connection with the local literary magazine, Bay Area Poet Seasonal Review. He is also a poet who has been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize in poetry. David Eugene Parch is a prolific poet of the Bay Area who has many chapbooks out. His chapbooks are available through his website and can be mail ordered from him personally through the address listed there. His website is www.thesighting.com. Both poets will go into more detail about themselves when they read. I, as usual, will read three of my poems from my book, Spirits of Bondage and Inherent Transcendence. Please also, if you can, buy the author's books. All links mentioned here will be on my poetry podcast page at mysticbabylon.podomatic.com. In a few months, or hopefully by December, I will be producing a hippie fiction novel in serial form as a free podcast and also for sale. It is called Little Bird Told Me. This is a double entendre. Little Bird in the story is an American Indian who is a mentor guide to a young hippie couple in the 90s who literally conquer the world. It is a surrealistic, hippie, spiritual tale and psychologically stimulating. I hope you stay tuned for it when it comes out in a few months. The for sale version will go for a modest price and will be considered more like your donation to good literary entertainment. The poetry session will start shortly. Thank you.
I am Eugene David, the poet, and first of all, I would like to thank Marvin for inviting me to be a co-reader with him this morning on this podcast. My poetry is probably best described as being hard to describe, so I would recommend that you go to my website, as mentioned by John in the intro. One thing I could say about my poetry is that it is eclectic, and that word would refer also to the style as well as the subject matter. Again, my website is www.thesighting.com. My first poem is a short poem and a little bit of an older poem, but it does give a good vision of my attitude in a certain way. It's called Reality. Someday, I'm going to take your advice and finally face up to reality. Someday, I'm going to walk right up and face up to it and give it a good punch in the nose. My next poem is one of my poems that deals with self-identity. And this one approaches the subject from a totally different angle. It's called It Takes a World. It takes the raven soaring, whose joy I share, dancing in the wind. It takes the sun setting, stunning me with the brilliance of fading light. It takes the waves running through the grasses, bending me over and breaking my stride. It takes the white-crowned sparrow's song, starting a melody in my heart, which melts me to the bone. It takes the water trickling down the rocky hillside, giving me a thirst I will never quench. It takes the quail on its perch in breeding plume, whose pride I feel swelling in my breast. It takes the raccoon's silliness, making me squeal with laughter in the night. It takes the fresh dew to which I awaken, flavoring my morning beverage slurped from fescue blades. It takes the carcass of despair I meet in the lonely, desolate valley. It takes the wolf pups scurrying about in the underbrush of my hopes and dreams. It takes the ever-surrounding call, enveloping me in the warm blanket of my own existence to discover who I am. The next poem is a true story about a relative. It's called My Niece. When she was a little girl, she looked at me and noticing the moles on my face, awkwardly asked, "Ew, what are those things on your face?" Well, that was long ago. But recently, she asked my sister, "Why don't they buy themselves a decent car? They've got lots of money. What's up with them?" The good news is, she's obviously still a little girl. The next poem is inspired by a book I've been reading lately. It's called Tending the Wild, written by M. Cat Anderson. The epigraph for the poem is taken from the book. It is a quote from a Native American. It goes like this. "Everything is living, even the rocks, even that bench you are sitting on. Everything is alive. That's what we Indians believe. White people think everything is dead." The poem is called World Over, All Living. Te quadi wedi tula lakadzi. Well, now that's a mouthful. And all we asked for was how to say animal, and we get this. And it means literally something like world over, all living. Put that in your dictionary, will ya? Yes, everything is alive. The humans and animals, the birds and fish, the plants and trees, the rocks and mountains, the sea, the marshes, the rivers, and of course, the winds. So, as it turns out, we weren't just talking about animals after all. And where does that leave us? How can we know what is living if everything is alive? And how, pray tell, do we translate that? Ours is the language of distinction. We distinguish between the living and the non-living, by which we mean what? The merely existing? We want to define life as plant, animal, human, and we wonder if life occurs on other planets, anywhere in the universe, anywhere in that imaginary expanse beyond our everyday experience, beyond our own world, beyond that planet, that dead rock from which we, the rare and precious living, somehow emerged. All of that is a distinction for which the Native American has no vocabulary. And yet, actually, they were able to merely exist quite nicely, thank you very much, for thousands of years without us and without our language. But that's not all. They also see the world over, all living, as their relatives. Yes, everything is alive, and we are all related, us and the mountains and the rivers. They all share our joy and our burden. And we must take care of them, learn their needs, for their needs are also ours. And if we neglect them and disrespect them, we are told they will get after us. But we have no language for any of this. How can we dissolve ourselves into that for which we have no words? We draw limits instead to our relationships. We insist on boundaries and divisions without which we would lose what we fondly refer to as our identity. But theirs is a language of harmony, union, and community, a family of the living the world over. They have no vocabulary for the dead world we have created with our clever distinctions. The next poem is somewhat on the lighter side, and also, in a way, a bit autobiographical. It's called All the Stuffed Children. I once wanted to go on an ego trip, but I couldn't afford the ticket. That was the same year my self-confidence went off to college. Only to end up switching majors so many times they had to give me 3 separate diplomas, each with a complex interdisciplinary title of its own. And that made me vastly overqualified to be human, of course. So I settled down and married a beautiful little anxiety. Together we had 10 oversized stuffed children, but none of them turned out to amount to much, and I have long since forgotten their names. Recently, my gut feeling returned to its hometown of Lake Laziness, where I fish for distractions in the afternoon sun, and where ex-professors drift by in their boats as I call out, "I was your student once," to which they reply, "I have no students, only fans." And I just sigh, "Never mind." The next poem is my most recent poem of the set that I'm reading today. It's called The Confines of Infinity. For each attempt to express how I feel, there are at least 14,000 radically different cloud formations, each of equal and superior beauty, each one designed to unravel the deepest emotion. For every tree in the entire state of Oregon, there are several catastrophic experiences we all go through on our way to the dime store. There are hundreds of ways to pick apart the petals of a sunflower, each with its very own wish and fantasy. And each word in the dictionary turns out to be the key to the entire universe, if only it were not trapped within the confines of infinity. We can go on splitting hairs forever if we want to, but there are too many bridges to build, too many dreams to fulfill, and never a moment to waste. And finally, the last poem is dedicated to my wife. It's called Reassurance. The reassurance of your moaning and groaning, squirming and tossing and turning, your muttering and babbling, vaguely talking in your sleep, reminding me that you're lying next to me, turning the empty night into a warm and comforting bed. Thank you very much.
Hello, this is Marvin R. Heemstra, poet humorist, delighted to be here today with Eugene David, Espresso Poet Philosopher. If you'd like information about my CD in Deepest USA, or upcoming performances, or my book French Cast Destiny, you can reach me at drollmarv@aol.com. That's drollmarv@aol.com. For those lucky people listening who are not poets, here's how to spot one every time. The title, The Dead Giveaway, or How to Spot a Poet. A poet smiles without any warning. A big mouth, inside-out baby metaphor just cracked its shell in the gothic candle incubator of that poet's heart. A poet stops in a poet's tracks anytime, anywhere, to see an iceberg rosebud open. A poet loves to chant bartender guides sliding down the drink name. Singapore Gin Sling, Sink or Swim Cocktail, Sir Ridgeway Night Surprise, Sledgehammer Cocktail, Sleepyhead Cocktail, Slow Gin Fizz, Slow Gin Ricky, Smash, Orange or Ginger, Smiler Cocktail, Snapper Cocktail, Snicker Cocktail, Snowball Cocktail, Sonora Breeze Cocktail, So-So Cocktail, Soul Kiss Cocktail Number 1, Soul Kiss Cocktail Number 2, Sucker Extreme Champion Award Cocktail, Texas Fizz. Can a poet weep, chuckle like polished rocks in the outgoing tide, cuss extravagantly, and whistle, "California, here I come," all in the same poem? A poet can. I love prehistoric rock painting, all kinds of animals, hand prints totally out of hand, people dancing their dreams. People tended to do much better before they tried to think. Title, Carbon Dating Can Be Pretty Sexy, But Remember, Forever isn't. Long, long ago, before people got stuck in thoughts, giraffes galloped by, joyful notes bouncing on the landscape. People painted those giraffes on solid rock. Rock loved the paintings, flatly refused to give them up to the hot-tongued Lisando winds or the cold rain cloudbursts. I paint poems, heartscapes, high on a cliff. Rock face will cherish my words, hold them tight till earth growls. Thanks a lot for the memory. And snorts the last snort and explodes. What will be left? Dust that's been around, and countless space-borne buttons still on the card, dreaming of a good home on a hot, thumping jazz bass player's vest. This is a serious poem titled, Please Learn a New Dance. Let the soldiers forget the trick step of death. In the innocent eyes of a philosophy student, the soldiers are about to kill. Let the soldiers remember the trick step of life. At a disco dancing with soldiers from every country, in a world suddenly human. This is a prose poem, a dramatic monologue titled, A Human in Hand is Worth Two Online.
Trish and I met at a blow-me-away website, www.holeinthesky.org, chat room chat on possible day trips into the ozone layer. It was so cool. After that, Trish and I emailed every night, all night, for 3 months. We shared everything. Easy-to-follow instructions on how to make Martha's favorite totally silent streamlined 1950s underwater pencil sharpener, a scrumptious recipe for pineapple tofu upside-down fritters, and best of all, never-fail methods for serious litigation with exercise machine manufacturers. I've never felt closer to any email person. It was better than really real. It was e-real. Nothing ever lasts. Had to leave America offline. I didn't want to do it. I kept getting the same message that said,
your code will not connect for any number of very good reasons.
And then a dirt mean recorded voice would say, goodbye. I just got tired, so tired of all those goodbyes. I emailed Trish my new email address. She'd write back, no problem, Walt. I'll see you tomorrow night. Tomorrow night came, nothing. Frantic, I emailed Trish, and after 2 days of virtual anxiety, the message bounced back on me. The screen said,
this email address has never existed, and it never will. Try again later.
And then a snotty new canned voice said,
bye-bye. I've just had 5 cat poems published in a wonderful anthology titled For Loving Precious Beasts from Purple Sage Press. I'll share some of them today. The first one's about Vaughn, a very feisty little cat who showed his character the second day. We took him, a 5-inch little bit of fluff, to the vet for a checkup. He got so excited he bit right through Lloyd's thumbnail, causing a great fountain of blood, no permanent damage. We knew we had a tough little critter on the hands. Title of the poem, 504, Earthquake Today. Earth woke up late, wrong side of the bed, and stuck out a mean tongue at the sun. Earth was tired of nice. Earth worked hard all day long, but couldn't stop thinking about the injustice of it all. 5 o'clock rush was the last straw. Earth did a shimmy, a bump, and a grind. I'll give those humans something really big to bounce between their knees. We were all home, thank God. Vaughn vanished under a bed.
Lloyd caught the marble Discopolis in flight. I rode a George Am. The really big final curtain? Earth got bored, yawned, and went back to sleep. We checked our losses. A cocky pitted marble classical Greek warrior plume chipped off clean. A definite improvement. And a miniature ancient Shinto fantasy mountain smashed to bits. Nothing is forever, but where was Vaughn? Not under a bed, not in a closet, not behind the hanging obi, not under anything. Vaughn is a highly acclaimed disappearing cat, but this was a record. 1.5 hours of nowhere. After looking under the beds countless times, we noticed a bit of escaped stuffing, torn cheesecloth hanging loose. Vaughn was neatly snuggled up inside the box spring, relaxed and ready for anything. Next, we have a very short poem about the perspective that animals have and what makes them enjoy our lives. Title, The Human Nut. Vaughn loves to watch me dry my toes. Gives him great personal delight to observe his human standing on his head, crumbling a towel. If you are a cat with a tongue, you carefully lick between each toe. And that is that. The title of this poem is One Hot Trio. Every now and then, for a moment or two, everything works out just right for all concerned. Love is that moment. We're about to meet Juniper, a very large lilac point Siamese cat who produced at least 2 buckets of loose fur each and every day of his precious life. This morning, I listen once again. I've done it all my life to Beethoven's Emperor Concerto, originally written to help God feel better about things. During the Adagio and Poco Mosso, I give Juniper an exorbitant front and back and all around wrong way, right way rub. Living room floor turns into one magnificent cloudscape of white, fluffed out winter fur. Juniper, Beethoven, and I are all together in heaven. For the last poem, I have another poem about Vaughn, titled Vaughn Rampant. He never lost his dislike for the vet. How did we know? Every time we got into the examination room, he would climb on my head and pee down my back. The kind vet decided to stop by on the way home and give him his shots. She put him on his hind legs. As the needle approached his little bottom, he let out a blood-curdling yelp and skid the entire length of the dining table, leaving a neat double track deep in the wood. Vaughn Rampant. The rampant ones are always with us, lions rampant waving the latest melodramatic tales. On flags, thimbles, toothpicks, and condoms, a poet in red rampant. Roy Rogers and Trigger rampant forever. Freshly sandblasted gargoyles beyond rampant. Madonna, after the presents are open, rampant. Chameleons rampant in assorted colors. The ghost of Napoleon extremely bored, but rampant. Be that as it may, there's never been anyone quite like Vaughn Rampant. Visions of a saber-toothed tiger quartet playing early Mahler on the strings of the air fade out fast. When centuries of raw instinct and a pushy troublemaker moon command Lilac Point Vaughn, usually a cat of sublime contentment, skyward on hind legs, claws out for the kill. Cream, spoiling yowls, wake up the devil's tail as 12 1/4 inches of unmitigated fury proudly proclaim a nasty conquest, victory absolute, and the original uncut Technicolor Book of Revelation, in that order. We have a pillow shield ready. We know how to use it. Thank you all.
This ends Mystic Babylon Poetry Podcast. I hope you can come back in 2 weeks. In a few weeks, I'm going to go video, and I'm going to have video podcasts. I might video podcast from this website, or it might be another one, so stay tuned. I'll probably tell you when I do it. Thank you very much. Bye.
This podcast is a member of the Association of Poetry Podcasting
at poetrypodcasting.org.